Hey, this is a podcast. No, wait, it's a comedy podcast. Well, we tried to make it a comedy podcast. And it's not meant to offend anyone. So don't get offended, okay? And wait, there's something else. Oh, yeah. Listener discretion is advised.
Audiomatic presents Our Last Week.
Hi, Kunal.
Hi, Paul.
Kunal, we need to tell our listeners that Our Last Week is going to be live.
Yeah, we're doing a live show on the 1st of December.
Friday at 8:30 at Above the Habitat in Khar, Mumbai. You and I, Kunal, will be live.
At Above the Habitat.
Above the Habitat. Tickets are live on Book My Show.
They're live. But is this like saying above Sophia Baba Auditorium or above the NCPA or above St. Andrews? Like there's a venue and then we're above it. Is that how it works?
The way I see it is imagine if you and I had built a small little thing next to the Taj Mahal.
Okay.
You know, so we are hoping for some spillover crowd, you know, like,
yeah.
So we'll tell people, you know Taj Mahal? This is just right next to it.
Okay. So
it's next to Taj Mahal. But what is it? Doesn't matter what it is.
Got it.
You know the main one, it's next to it.
Got it. Okay.
So we are at Habitat, but above.
Above the Habitat, okay.
Tickets are live on Book My Show. You can just type Our Last Week live and you will get to see the link of the show. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you get free entry. And Patreon subscribers get to bring a plus one along with them.
Wow.
Now, yeah, I don't know if you're thinking the same thing, but I would lose respect for our Patreon subscribers if they had a plus one.
Mm.
You know, like I really feel that our Patreon subscribers are pretty much alone.
Also, I think that even if the beauty of this thing is that even if we've given a free plus one to the Patreon subscribers, our show is so niche that most Patreon subscribers are unable to get anyone within their own friend circle to listen to this show, you know.
So imagine if it's that hard for them to listen, bringing them is going to be impossible.
Yeah. So that's why we're safe. There's no stress.
We're safe.
We could have because the partner given plus say, four where you, also. No, they don't have
plus
anyone.
Plus five.
Yeah.
Plus seven.
Yeah.
Because the partner will say, where are you going? And they'll say, Ari, that podcast I listened to, what podcast? You know, so right there,
you've lost the other partner.
Yeah. Our team will send all the Patreons a mail very soon and you can RSVP on that mail. And if we are still alive at the end of this live session, Kunal, we might try to go to other cities and try to do this and see if, you know, our listeners in those cities are as disturbed as they are in this city.
I don't know about all these plans. Let's just do this show and then we'll see.
You know, I've not seen your childhood report card, school.
Yeah.
But if I had to predict what your class 3 class teacher would have written, enthusiastic, optimistic, and a lover of life would not be the three things.
Yeah, maybe not.
Would you agree?
Yeah.
I need to talk to you about a massive crisis going on in Calcutta.
Mm.
Okay. 2 days ago, Pakistan, the cricket team showed up in Calcutta to play Bangladesh at Eden Gardens, famed Eden Gardens. And the Pakistani cricket team, who have already been accused of lack of fitness and eating by the cricketer Wasim Akram, has accused the team of eating kgs and kgs of mutton with no fitness.
Mm.
So they've been accused of this, but they seem to be quite shameless and they disregarded these comments because they landed in Calcutta. The first thing they did is order Calcutta's famed biryani.
Mm.
But the controversy is this. They have ordered biryani from a small upstart restaurant. I mean, they're not an upstart restaurant, the well-known restaurant, but they are not part of the biryani mafiosi.
Mm.
They're not the old, you know, the mafia families.
Mm-hmm.
of Calcutta. The big mafia family biryanis, the legendary big ones, are Arsalan and Shiraz. Mm. Maybe Royal to some extent. This is a startup called Zamzam. Mm. Maybe it's pronounced Zamzam. Mm. The team ordered from there. And this threw the whole city into a frenzy, you know, into a sort of nervous chaos.
How was it? How because was the biryani? How could they order from here? That kind of thing.
Correct. Because the biryani consiliaries, the powers that be that rule Calcutta biryani, said, we've been here for hundreds of years. Who or what is Zamzam? How dare they?
Hmm.
I have not yet publicly taken a stand. Hmm. I've been hounded for days by the press saying, what do you think? What do you think? I haven't said anything. I want to know, will you be taking an official stand on this?
You know, my official stand has less to do with where they ordered the biryani from. You know, I love the food in Calcutta. I famously...
Of course you do.
Well, not so famously, but I went to Calcutta when I was 16, 17. And I came... And I'm not kidding, but I literally came back about 6 kilos heavier. I was there for 10 days. So I just literally ate my way through Calcutta. And it's very easy to do that, especially with all the sweets and, you know, the desserts and everything. So I don't blame the Pakistani, also because see the opportunities to travel to India, to a city that's known for its food, is very rare, you know, like, and how many times are this Pakistani team going to come to India? If they're in a city that's known for a certain thing, they should try it, you know, and what is a biryani going to do? You're pretty much out of the World Cup. You're just saying, now forget it. Let's just eat the biryani. What are we going to do?
The issue more than enjoying the great cuisine of a city, the controversy seems to be about who they've chosen, which is an upstart biryani house. Yeah.
Now that
a startup. They picked a startup versus the legendary houses of biryani.
That is disappointing. Mm. You know, that
you are disappointed. So you're on the side of the old mafiosi.
Yeah, because, you know, if you're going through the whole, you know, the effort, and then there's also some sort of espionage involved where you have to maybe hide the biryani and bringing it from a rear entry of the hotel. you have to not let the news leak. And then so I'm saying there's a lot of production involved. And then if you don't order from the right place, you know, I don't know, maybe the biryani was excellent from Zamzam.
Zamzam seems to think so. Their spokesperson said, you know, this we don't deserve this trolling.
Hmm.
You know, we are known for our biryani. We may be an upstart, but look, the Pakistani team have ordered from us, so we're no longer an upstart. And it got personal, actually, at many levels. I don't know if some violence will ensue. But
you know, I've always
basically
felt
the
this, like, yeah. you know, I've always felt this whenever I look at any tourist who's in the city and who's being guided by a person in the city. And sometimes you overhear these things. Sometimes you're walking past, you know, some sort of like building or a place in the city, and the person is completely giving them the wrong picture of, you know, of a thing or of a place. Even, you know, and you feel, arey, yaar, that guy is misrepresenting this or this place, or he's taking them to the wrong place. He's the wrong person. But you feel kind of responsible for anyone at some level, you know, who comes in and they're just being given not the full experience, you know, and you always feel like if it were me, now I would have done it this way. Or I would have done it better. They would have really seen a good place to eat. It's okay now, like, you know, so how many, like, every tourist you can't like advise where to, but sometimes when you see this on the street, you feel, arey yaar, what is he showing them? Kahan leke ja rahe usko? So
you think the middleman is responsible for the Zamzam here?
Yeah. Who advised them? You know, it's an advisory thing. And it's basically the Pakistan team's talent to eat or play cricket is the same. It's basically these middlemen who are fucking up Pakistan cricket, right? It's the board, it's the coaches, and it's the advisors who are advising them where to order biryani from. So it's not the team's fault. You know what I'm saying?
No.
It's not the 15.
No.
They're good. Whatever is they're put in front good. Of them and experience it. But now, who is giving them the advice? You know,
and Zamzam's orders have shot up now, obviously because everyone was like.
But I think it is very, very representative of the state in which the Pakistan team is. You know, the talent is there.
Yeah.
But the that final call, you know, where should we order from? What should our batting order be? Who should be in this team? This is the management issues. These are management issues.
Yeah. You have been traveling around the UK on trains. You've been to Glasgow. You've been to London.
Yeah. I mean, I really Edinburgh. Enjoyed my time in Glasgow. It was a... it was a lovely city, and I went off on a trail one of the days up to one of the locks, not the Highlands, but you know, just an hour's drive out. Very friendly people, very warm people, always, you know, always eager to crack a joke, or just like you know, they don't mind really having saying a long sentence. I found that, like in England or in Bombay or in a lot of places, people just use shorter sentences. They want to end it fast, you know. But in Scotland, it's quite refreshing. They don't mind using longer sentences, you know. Like, and
they have the time. Yeah,
they have the time. The accent is difficult. The accent is difficult to pick up. Half the time you're just hanging on to certain words. You know, you're just picking up a few words here and there. So it's quite. Yeah, because in London, nobody has the time to talk to you, and you understand perfectly well what they're saying in London. You know, you understand every word that's coming out of their mouth. So I think it's quite ironic that, like, where you don't understand, they're very happy to speak, and where you understand perfectly well, they just don't want to say anything to you.
This is quite a conundrum.
Yeah.
Because London, I guess people are in such a rush. It's like, straight down on the left, sir. Yeah. I've told you, sir. It's straight down on the left, sir.
Yeah.
You mean just don't talk to me. Don't talk to me.
Yeah.
And Glasgow, I found, I don't know if I told you, my aunt and uncle used to live in Glasgow for many years.
Yeah, of course.
And we discussed this, but I found the Glaswegian accent to be a sort of like, right, so what are you doing here then? You know, a very sort of sing-songy, a comedy, yeah, so you're a comedian then? You know, it's a little bit of a, what kind of comedy do you do? You know, so then it's a little sing-songy. I remember taking a taxi to my show in Glasgow, and the guy was very chatty. He's like, you know, I fancy myself a bit of comedian myself. And he told me how at the taxi union's annual gathering, he's performed. And he'd made some very niche jokes about how difficult it is to get the taxi medallion and something about traffic lights in Glasgow. And it seemed like when he performed at that event, he killed it. He destroyed it. And it taught me how the more specific you are, the better you are as a comedian. Which is why I feel like every profession should have its own comedian, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So his whole thing is like he was doing taxi and traffic-related Glasgow things. But I didn't understand any of his jokes. He told me all his jokes just to check, you know, like, what do you think of these? You know, he gave me a thing. I didn't understand any of them because of the accent. But it did teach me a valuable lesson, which is, you know, to be a comedian or pick a profession, then do that profession for a long time. You know, the trouble with comedy is that it's too generic. You know, like, we're expected to know a lot about a lot. Like, I think if, for example, say, people that do piping in buildings, you know, just piping, any sort of pipe, water pipe, drain pipes, they must have a conference, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think they should bring in an outside comedian. It should be a drain pipe guy only who does comedy.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they have it a lot in like say doctors community, like a lot of doctors. I'm sure, you know, they have a lot of conventions, eye specialists. They love having conventions. Every few months there's a convention talking about new technologies, big breakthroughs and, you know, advancements and also people's achievements. At those events, there will definitely be eye doctors who fancy themselves as stand-up comedians. And I think that, you know, it always, in every profession, no matter how much you've studied or you've worked in it, it always gives you the option of stand-up comedy. That's the beauty, you know, is that listen, I'm not a very good eye doctor, but I would be fantastic at eye doctor conventions around the world.
Comedy, you know, yeah, comedy. That's my thing.
And I know the inside out of, you know, eyes. And I can really do great jokes on like eye drops and, you know, cataract surgeries and all
and
of
also
that.
Like laser machines, you know, which are the good ones, which are the bad ones.
And jokes
like,
about that. You know, jokes things. About brands of machines. Now, how are we going to get all this? You know,
but we won't know all
we
this.
We won't know.
You know?
So it needs someone from within the industry.
But I also feel that with a Glaswegian accent is hard.
That's
because
tough.
He was giving me niche comedy, niche Glaswegian taxi traffic comedy.
Hmm.
And he said, so what do you think then? Do you think I could do like 10 minutes at the Glee Club Glasgow then?
Hmm.
And I couldn't tell him because I was like, you know, the niche stuff is great. It's very good.
Hmm.
But I don't know if you do a general Glasgow comedy club, sir, how many will just want traffic, medallion and taxi related humor?
Hmm.
Maybe a lot. Hmm. Maybe a lot. And obviously, the audience will understand your accent because you're from Glasgow. And in fact, I'm the one with the accent, not you.
Yeah, yeah.
So I didn't know how to guide him. Mm. So the sometimes, you know, you can have nice people. Your conundrum is great. But if they sound different, even if they're being nice, you don't know how to respond to the niceness.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know which is better. I don't know if you would rather be in a big world city with rude people that you completely comprehend.
Mm.
Or a very nice place where you can't understand anyone. I would pick a very nice place where I can't understand anyone.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And that's without getting into the cities themselves, because cities have other things to offer. But in terms of interaction with people, of course, I don't mind not understanding as long as the person's being nice. Because, and also, you know, there are so many other countries with, you know, so many different languages. In any case, you don't understand what they're saying. So if they're nice, it just helps. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I would rather be, you know, like if I lived in Iceland or whatever, I think I'd be perfectly fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, like I live in India where I understand everyone. And at the same time, I understand nothing.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, just language can't be that helpful.
It can't. Yeah.
So Kunal, let me tell you a couple of things that have been going on in India while you've been shooting abroad. My friend, and we talked about this, I have a politician friend and some developments with my politician friend. I won't name my politician friend or the party she's in, but she's been accused of giving her Lok Sabha. She's a member of parliament of the lower house, and she's accused of giving her username and password, her Lok Sabha username and password, to a friend to ask question on her behalf as a member of parliament. And that is apparently an offense. I don't know if it's a criminal offense, but it's an offense, which they're accusing her of. She's admitted that she gave her password to her friend to log in to Lok Sabha and ask questions on her behalf. She asked me what I think of it, and I'm not sure what I think of it. So I'm now asking you on this podcast what you think of it. And I realize by asking you this conundrum, in many ways, I'm becoming like her. Because I'm asking you to have a point of view on my behalf. I'm outsourcing it to you. She outsourced it to a friend for which they are saying you've committed a crime. We do a podcast. We're not members of the Lok Sabha, so we are not committing any crime. But I'm outsourcing it to you to tell me what I think I should tell her that sounds like what I would say.
Well, the problem is that I don't, like, I don't have a very strong opinion on this. It's, you know, and that's also a problem with someone who's not interested in asking questions. Like, say she gave it to the person. Like, it's exactly and it's exactly what you're doing with me. If I don't have the interest to sort of have an opinion, or that guy didn't really have an interest to ask questions, but he was more interested.
That's a waste of a username and password.
Yeah, he was really not, he was just not into questions, you know, like he's like, I don't know. I'm not going to ask questions and all.
Because if he was, he would have run for parliament.
Yeah,
right? He would have run.
I'm not going to ask questions, but I can use this at least. You know, that you have asked me to ask questions. And I think I'm in the same position. That
you don't have a view to give me a view.
Yeah. So I can't help, because I'd rather use this thing as a conundrum than answer the question. You know what I'm saying? So I'm doing exactly what that guy is
correct.
Doing.
Yeah.
Like wasting other people's time listening to something that I don't have an opinion on.
Do you remember years ago we had a film idea? I don't know if, I think you had this film idea where a very rich man hires a person to have opinions on their behalf. So they have no opinions on anything, but they hire a person who tells you what you should feel about certain things. And what your stand should be on certain areas. This is a bit like that. Now everything is so polarized.
Yeah. Because I just think
like,
that, you know when it,
should I like Modi? Should I not like Modi? You know, like maybe you need to hire a guy to tell you.
And,
you know?
And I think that that is actually a much better way to live, because then you don't have to engage. You know, you don't have to, like, you can just go about your day, you can chill in the pool, and then someone else is like really staying informed and like, you know, like he's fully into what's happening in the world and like, this is where I stand and I'm really feeling passionate and all. So then when you get into a conversation with someone, like, where do we stand on this? You know, it's very much like running a country.
Do you remember?
So you run your life like you run, you know, a country. What's our opinion on
this?
Do
I love my wife? Do I not love
her?
What's our take?
Fill me in fast. And then you know, you just say, this, you know, this is horrible. This is wonderful. Whatever. And then you just get into, you know, so you can have a very strong point of view without getting really emotionally involved in any of this. I think it's
Gaza. Great. Where do we stand on Gaza? What is the...
Yeah.
Terrible. Very bad. Both sides, what's happening is very bad.
Very bad. Very bad.
No. One side is very bad.
Which side?
One of the sides. One of the sides is bad. Kunal, very quick conundrum.
Yeah.
Very quick. I didn't discuss this with you. Someone sent me a message. Hey, lovely meeting you. I did a show on Sunday. They sent me a message. Hey, lovely meeting you. So wonderful to hear from you. We haven't met up. Let's catch up sometime, right? Does this message require a reply or no?
You know this person or you don't? You're meeting this person for the first time.
Many years ago, I'd met them at an event. And now many years later, I'm meeting them. So I have a two-part conundrum. One, does this message require a reply or is this one of those messages? You know, like at some point, the WhatsApp exchange has to end, right? Because no one in WhatsApp says, chal bye, I'm ending it. Which I think would really help.
Problem is that even if you say, chal bye, I'm ending it, the other person will put a thumbs up or a clap.
Yeah.
Then you'll respond to the clap with a like on that clap.
Yeah.
Then it's just left dangling. See, WhatsApp messages are just threads which have just been left in the air. They're just moving around like that. You can grab onto it at any time.
Yeah.
It's not the end of anything.
Do you know
email,
how many
you know?
Messages there must be which just has the words Thursday question mark that have been unanswered, you know? Or really question mark?
Yeah.
Or your aunt question mark? You know, there's got to be millions around the world that have been just left like that.
Yeah.
You know, unanswered. So my question is, this person is good to meet you. First, I met him on Sunday and I think it was just a general catch up, etc. Now, how... late first, I didn't respond day one because I thought this was just one of those you just let go. But now is it too late? It's already Wednesday. If I say it was lovely meeting you, now do I have to give a reason why I haven't written for 3 days?
Yeah, you have to.
You know, like now it's almost, there's a statute of limitations, isn't there, to one of these greetings.
Sometimes you want the message to just spoil. You know, it spoils, it sars, and then you don't have to revisit it.
It's like
now it's become smelly. Now I don't have to go
like
to that message
fruit.
Anymore. It's like fruit, it's gone bad.
It's spoiled.
It's a spoiled message. Yeah. But the
it's
problem
a
is,
message.
The problem is that what I found is, that because your last message on WhatsApp is still there as a history. So when you have to pick up this conversation later on in life, as it will happen, you know, a few months down the line, maybe even next year, that the history of how this conversation was left is always there. That you hadn't responded to my offer is on record. It's not like an email where you can send a fresh email. Now when I'm talking to you, it's from the point of our last conversation, you know.
And that gap shows what a dick you are.
And shows what a dick you are. And it's there. It's like the last thing on your message. So So that's the problem with WhatsApp and like, see, email or a separate, this thing is because it ends, right? Okay, I didn't respond to the email, but it's a history thing. Oh, yeah, I forgot. You can send a fresh email. But here, when I'm chatting with the same person, my assholeness is there just above my thing, my request.
Public record.
It's a record.
Public record.
It's a record.
My fear is now, 3 days have passed. If I say, hey, damn, sorry, my parents were in town, it was a bit rushed. Like, this is a person I meet every 3-4 years randomly at events. I don't want them to then write, oh, what happened with your parents? Because then a friendship starts, you know, like... So when it spoils, you got to let it spoil.
Yeah.
Because WhatsApp has a way of ripening it again, you know? Which doesn't happen with real fruits.
Yeah. Or friendships.
Or friendships. It dies, it dies.
It's done. So let's get into a break.
Yeah, let's do a break. This is a break.
This is the break.
This is a break.
Welcome to the break.
What was it earlier? Not a break.
That was not a break.
This is a break. During this break, we would like to advertise a product.
What should we advertise?
Hands.
Hands, yeah.
Hands. Without it, you...
It's a little tougher.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
Get hands.
Yeah.
Live life to the fullest. So, if you don't want to listen to shit ads like this...
Don't listen to these ads.
Do something with your life.
Yeah.
Go to patreon.com.
Yeah.
Where you will not have to listen to us talking nonsense.
Yeah, and you don't have to listen to this garbage part of the podcast.
This garbage part. You can listen to other garbage parts of the podcast.
And you can listen to it ad-free.
For you to be on Patreon, get special episodes, merchandise, live shows.
Yep.
And, you know, many other benefits. Go to patreon.com/
our last week.
Bye.
Bye.
Now I'll talk for another hour, Kunal, so people switch off immediately.
We can just do a low hum over here during the ad break.
Shall I read the Hanuman Chalisa?
No. That, because that'll get offensive.
Offend. Yeah. To religious and non-religious people.
And to people with ears.
Exactly. Yeah. Kaan. Zarurat hai. That should be an ad for Spotify. Kaan. Leke aaiye. Quick question. You... are in Scotland and you went and saw some comedy.
I did. I was one of the evenings we went to a comedy club, a very nice comedy club, Monkey Barrel.
Monkey Barrel, very famous. Yeah, on Nidri Street.
It was a good show. It was a good show. Some good comics, wonderful host. And there was one guy who started off the show and... a couple of them, but the first guy, he was going through his set and then he made a joke. He made a joke and it kind of fell flat, but it wasn't an evening ender kind of joke. It wasn't, but he just felt like while he was on stage that like the audience had taken it badly. And then his other jokes weren't really landing. And then he, in the middle of his set, started lamenting about the failure of that joke and sort of the set, you know, and...
he got nostalgic while in the present.
Yeah, and he kept referring to his other gigs that he was doing, you know, at different places, and he was giving us instances of what people had said from other gigs. And it was very awkward, and I actually found that the most interesting, because I actually got to see a guy who was really squirming and struggling for a large part of the set. The others were funny, and you know,
We've had this discussion. You've for a long time enjoyed the crumbling of a comedian in front of an audience much more than you have of him being successful and making fun of people.
Yeah, because see, the success, you're just laughing and then people laugh and then they go home. But when you see an actual thing happening of, you know, of someone trying to do something and it failing... And then how he's sort of like, you know, all the shit that's going through his head. And then the rumor of that joke that he had cracked. Other comics came out saying, I'm not going to say anything about that. So it had spread like wildfire through the wings, you know. That the legend of this joke that had ruined this guy's set had spread through the wings to other comics who came out quite wary.
And infected the night.
Had affected the
night
evening.
For the audience. Yeah. And
then you can think of the conversations, fuck, he's really fucked out there. Oh shit, we got to pick it up. These guys, you know, so you can imagine all the shit that's happened. So for me, the actor, activity of that, like, you know, a smooth show where people just come out and then the comic is very funny. That's nice. It's good. And then, you know, you go home, you remember maybe three jokes. But I'm saying when you see this happening, now, when you see chaos, like, and then, oh shit, then the other comic has come on and said, I'm not going to say anything about abortion, you know, and so then you know that some shit has gone down in the wings. And so I really like seeing that pressure on a person, and then that, and I found that very, I mean, it wasn't meant to be funny, but I found it quite funny, the way in which that sort of set panned out. So yeah,
it's brilliant. But also you find the real life aspect of, you know, like, I'm going to make you laugh. Let's laugh.
Yeah.
You find that a bit artificial, right? Like you like when human beings sort of like, you know, so, you know, what's going on with you? Why are you sitting with four beers? Mm. You know, and someone said, my child just died and I got out of jail. Mm. Oh, really? Now the comedian's struggling for... You find that moments of reality to be far more interesting.
Yeah.
From a comedic standpoint, yeah. Would you say?
Because, you know, to make the joke is one thing. And they're very talented and very quick at doing that. But sometimes that when that moment breaks and it becomes a little real for a few seconds, you know, and then there's discomfort and silence and then... It's like everyone's like, oh, shit. And it's not even... So I really enjoy... Yeah, I enjoy those moments, I think, a little more.
I had worked with a comic many years ago once who was reading from texts, right? It's a part of his act. And then in the middle of it, he got a text from his wife saying, I've had enough, I'm leaving you. I'm done, I'm leaving you. You know, you've been having too many affairs, whatever. And he read that. And then to see him sweat and kind of see the real guy, because what he really wanted to do for the rest of his 10 minutes is talk about how his wife is the one to blame and not... He wanted to have a real conversation. But he read out that text. He's like, hey, I just got a text from my wife saying she's leaving me. And then you also realize he hasn't processed it. And the audience is like, yeah, what text did he just get? And now for the rest of the evening, no one's interested in his jokes. They want to know what's going on in his personal life. And those were probably the best 10 minutes of reality, real emotions I've seen. Because he's distracted now. He's not into the comedy. His wife has just left him. And that room has almost become a monastery. Like, it's a therapeutic room with 100 people who've just got a glimpse into his marriage. You know, because... He's like, anyway, what was I saying about Libya? You know, and he carried on, you know, broken. But you really, what he wanted to say is, she's blaming me. She's blaming me. Let me tell you, day two of our marriage, let me tell you. You know, that's really what you wanted from him. And maybe that's what you're after. You don't like the artifice, the fakeness of it. You're looking for something real, which inevitably lies in collapse, in embarrassment, in sweating, in a certain kind of...
It lies between.
Like unpleasantness.
It lies in between, I think.
In between. It lies in between.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Last conundrum, Kunal, very quickly. I had a lunch party for about 15 people. Thought I'd ordered enough food. And I hadn't. And I'd run short because the restaurant had given me a certain proportion. And the reality was a different proportion. And what I ended up doing, because the restaurant was closed, so I couldn't have ordered more food, what I ended up doing was kind of sending out the food that I had in smaller plates, so it looked like there was more coming. But it was just the meals. If I put it on a big plate, it looked really small. So I kept sending out small portions rather than admit to the crowd, hey guys, we don't have enough food. We should order some more stuff. I wanted to not come across as the guy that didn't order enough. Is that fine? Like, is there any other way I could have played it? Or has this ever happened to you?
Will I try? I'm abused quite a bit for over-ordering. very often, and we do it very often. And for me, it's always, you know, it'll get eaten. Somebody will eat it. It's not going to go waste. It won't be thrown. We'll give it to someone. It'll, you know, it'll, we'll send it away with people, something. So, but it has happened, you know, where sometimes you feel cheated when the food comes because, yeah, the quantity that was promised and what has been provided or the size of the item, like, you know, it said whatever, samosas, and then they send mini samosas or they send something that's like the size of a finger instead of like, you know, a full croquette or whatever it is. Like, you feel cheated and you feel let down. What do you do in that situation?
Because the fault is not yours, right? You go to the restaurant and there's a guy there, usually in a tie. Right?
Yeah.
And you ask him one vital question. Do you think this is enough? And he says, that's enough, sir. And his word is sacrosanct, right? It's like the word of God.
Yeah.
Now, if that man lets you down, what do you do? Of course, you're taking the blame. You're getting shit from your wife at home. But it's not your fault. You relied on the man in the bow tie. You know, and he destroyed you.
Well, the first thing you should not do is eat, you know, yourself. So, I mean, you can't, like, unless you're using it as a decoy, you know, like, then you just nurse one kebab through the whole evening. And you keep saying, these kebabs, these kebabs. But you've actually just eaten one, you know. So, it's just, like, it seems like you've had many, but, like, then you need the food to kind of go around. You obviously don't eat. And then your partner, your wife doesn't eat. What else can you do?
But also the man in the bow tie doesn't pick up the phone.
Yeah.
Because deep down he knows he's fucked you. There's always a guy who betrays you, who throws you into the high seas. He knows he's done it. He doesn't even call you later to say, you know, sir, I think I miscalculated. He fully throws you in the high seas. And then he doesn't pick up the phone. You know, like, when you're drowning, I've realized, there are very few ropes that are thrown at you. Very few in life.
Yeah.
You know, and these are those decisions where the guests are all there, the plates are out, and you're just a little bit short and the restaurant is closed. And there's a cricket match going on and Swiggy's demand is very high.
Well, you got to come clean,
I guess. It's an unwinnable position.
At some stage, you got to come clean, you know.
You got to come clean. You got to tell people.
You got to tell them the reality.
You don't even pass the blame to the man on the bow tie?
No, I mean, you can do that, but it's not going to solve the problem, right? Like, the blame for them is not the issue at that point. The food is, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter now whose fault it is. Was it Anubhav who ordered less? Was it his partner? Was it the restaurant? Basically, I don't have enough to eat, you know. Now, that's the bottom line. So, what I would do is that, and I'm sure you would have as well, is that start making jokes about it and saying, listen, guys, I'm really sorry, but or lie. Aray, I spilled half of that gravy, is gone. Shit. I can't believe it now. We're going to run short. So can you just give me 15 minutes? I'll run down and get it from somewhere or I'll figure it out. But you got to come clean, I guess, because, you know.
Yeah, I don't like honesty. That's my problem. You know, I've never liked honesty.
Yeah.
My first option is if I can get away with some sort of deceit.
Some sort of lies.
Then I feel like I've won. Yeah. Honesty, everyone says honesty will always make you win in life. I think of the opposite. You know, honesty, like, is my last option.
Yeah, I guess the only thing is that you know that people are going to be talking about, if you just brush it under the carpet, you know, and say, that, and you don't even bring it up. You don't even bring up the lack of enough food. And then you just, like, you know, the evening ends and whatever. Everyone, you know, people are going to be talking about, where was the food? I didn't get anything. I just got like half a kebab. And then I thought more is coming out from the kitchen, but nothing was coming. And then finally that little plate of biryani came and it was hardly enough. So I'm saying, you know, this conversation is going to happen after people leave. So you got to then be comfortable with that, you know.
They're also dishonest. They're not having it. Because otherwise, then... I'm saying that honesty should be all sides. Now, let's all have it. I'm saying let there be no food. Let the man in the bow tie show up. And let me tell him he's to blame. And then he can say, no, you're to blame because you said you wanted it in within this budget. This budget, this is all you get, you bastard. And the guests should then say, you're cheap. Why did you call us? You're cheap. Then the whole thing should, then let's all have it. let the lunch dissolve into what it should be. Let be honestly, people, we've never liked you as a friend. Let it go there.
Full honesty.
You know, then let's have
We don't even know why we're honesty. Here. That kind of like this. That, like, let it just.
Yeah. It's just that my wife likes your wife, but I've never liked you. Never liked you. There's never enough food in this house. This is a shit house. We drove all this way for this. Fucking chips. Fuck you. Then let's fully have it out.
You're saying half honesty is no fun.
You know? Half honesty. And I think that's a lunch party that, knowing what you like about honesty and discomfort, is one you would want to attend.
But yeah, I wouldn't mind witnessing one of these, yeah. I think the last option you have is sort of... And I think this... I mean, you could run it like how governments run countries, like ours, for instance, is... Basically, build up the food so much that the quantity, you know, then you fool people into believing that it's a lot, you know, and that it's more than the last lunch that they went to. I think that is one way to go, which is that see, this quality you're not going to get anywhere else. You know, this, my guy, this stuff is not something...
He doesn't make very much. He doesn't give enough.
So, this is a very rare thing. We're fortunate that we've got it, you know. And remember the last time, though, he didn't send anything. He sent like 5 grains of rice. This time he sent a full plate. So, you know, you need to make
it's
them
like someone,
reminisce about a past that was worse. You know, you need to tell them about the past that was worse. The current, you need to build up into something that is fantastic. And I think that's...
So there's an economist called Ricardo, right? He's a famous Italian economist. And there's a theory of the Ricardian theory. He had a theory on rent, but he also had a theory on scarcity. That if you could create enough scarcity, then by default, you've created demand.
Yes.
Because you just have to tell people it's scarce. Yes. Yesterday, someone was telling me there's a very famous Indian designer called Sabyasachi who was speaking, and he had a very exclusive high-end event at his store with lots of Indian rich people. And his appeal to rich people is that Indian craftsmen are getting, you know, all these lucrative contracts from Christian Dior and stuff, Chanel, so they won't be available anymore. So whatever you see in my shop, just buy it up while you still can. Now, the thing is, this is a great sales pitch. Great. Because you don't know if the craftsmen are busy or not. But he's saying it's going to run out. So, this is your time. So, if I do the same with the lunch, I've under-ordered. But I'm like, savor what you've got. This is, it looks like Royal China. But this is not the Royal China you know. This is a special thing that the chef does.
This is a special one. And you can't eat too much. Just be careful. Because you just need 3 spoons of noodles. 3 spoons of noodles, that'll set. Just taste this, you'll see the difference. You know, that kind of thing. And you serve it also very
And when they can't see the difference, you double down.
You're like,
you don't deserve this. It's like this podcast. It's not for everybody. Now you might ask, is it for anybody? But we don't want to answer that question. This has been our last week, Kunal.
It has.
It's been lovely. Next week, we should see you back in India.
Yes, I will be back soon and we shall sit and do it together.
Indeed. The following week after which, I will be back in the UK and we shall do it in reverse. Because we're destined never to be together in the same country.
Yeah.
This is what, in the heydays of the British Empire, this is what it was like, right? Where one viceroy would finish and he said, well, I'm taking the ship to India, I'll see you there. And the other viceroy was like, okay, I'll be leaving India now. And the ships would cross in the high seas. It's like that.
It's sort of like that. Except that they would take, 2.5 months to get there?
Six. If you took Cape of Good Hope, 6 months.
Correct.
Yeah.
And some would die on the way.
Yeah. But chances of that happening to us is also very high.
High.
Yeah.
Because of lack of food.
Yeah, and because of the Gaza war, you'll have to probably fly through the Arctic Circle. It'll probably take you 6 months.
Take a while, yeah.
So, listeners, you're wonderful. We hope to see you on the 1st of December. We will be wearing our Audiomatic t-shirts. You wear what you want.
Yes. If I fit into mine, I will wear it.
Yeah. Chances are not high.
No.
Not if you're eating Zam Zam biryani.
Yeah.
Bye.
You were listening to Our Last Week, produced by Akanksha Kadam and Avdhoot Khanolkar, hosted by Anubhav Pal and Kunal Roy Kapoor.